Welcome to Tell Me Who You Really Are, the groundbreaking new podcast giving you unique insights into live coaching sessions with both regular and famous people. Truth-seeking, soul-lifting, profound conversations between me, Jo Emerson, and my clients as they seek to do business with their demons and change their lives. Bryony Gordon needs no introduction. A best-selling author and Telegraph journalist, she has been a major player in changing the conversations we can now all have around our mental health. She's also founder of Mental Health Mates, a charity offering peer support for those of us struggling with our mental health. By anyone's standards, she's a success, and yet she battles with her own confidence on a daily basis. In this episode, she allows us into the nooks and crannies of her mind as she and I unravel the root of her core belief that she's bad in some way. This is such a powerful episode, one of those coaching sessions I leave feeling overwhelming amounts of gratitude for the work I'm able to do. Listen out for themes of codependency, addiction, intrusive thoughts, and shame. So, Bryony, welcome, and tell me what it is you would like to work on with me today.
Oh, I mean, how long have we got?
About an hour.
Okay, well, I'll try and keep it brief then. I would like to work on not people-pleasing so much.
Okay. Like, what are the consequences of people-pleasing for you?
I spend my whole time worrying. A lot of my time at the moment, really, I don't know why it is at the moment, but an awful lot, I worry an awful lot about what other people think of me, and I'm sort of constantly saying out loud, what other people think of you is none of your business and all of that stuff. So I know it's unhealthy, but I sort of do it to the stage where it's not so much that I care so much about what other people think of me. It's that I don't necessarily trust so much in what I think of myself, if that makes sense. Like, I think what it is I sometimes need, I'm only okay if you're okay with what I'm doing.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm only okay. Yeah.
I just need to be okay.
So give me an example. The sun's beautiful. I know, it's beautiful.
Is a metaphor for something, Jo. An example. How can I give you an example without, you know...
You don't have to name any names. You could just give me a... You can if you want to.
Okay. If we can... No, I'm not going to do that. I suppose it's like, I doubt so often whether I'm like doing a good job, the way I respond to things. I'm like, should I have responded in that way? So like if someone crosses a boundary, you know, I'm like, am I overreacting? I tend to immediately go, I'm overreacting. And I don't, I'm very boundaryless. I'm very bad at putting boundaries in. I have a kind of, I need more confidence. It's in work. I frequently have people say to me, Bryony, if you believed in yourself, if you knew how other people saw you, all of this would go in a moment. But I worry a lot. I've always worried a lot. I can't think of specific examples. I can think of lots of specific examples, but none that I particularly want to kind of like go into in detail on a public kind of podcast. No, but it's work, it's friendships, I worry, you know. I think I can also overstate the effect, you know, like I think I can overthink the effect I might have on people.
Yeah, okay. So yeah,
a bit of right sizing as well, you know.
Yeah, well, we can all do with that on a daily basis. I'm interested in what you were saying though about you're not trusting yourself.
Yeah,
because that is the core of
In fact, my second book is literally that premise, that a lack of confidence is actually a lack of trust in self, and a lack of in our own ability to kind of cope with life, but also a lack of trust in the process of life, like as it's unfurling, as it's unfolding. Give me an example of when you have had high trust in yourself.
I mean, it's been when I've had high validation from outside. So, and I think that's kind of one of the problems. So, for example, when I suppose in like 2017, 2018, my career was kind of like flying, do you know what I mean? And I, yeah. It was like, I could, so I was like, oh my God, I do know intuitively what I'm doing. But the moment that I stop getting like masses of outside validation, I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not doing so well now, you know? I think, you know, validation is a really, it's something I've been thinking a lot about recently. Because when I was first really open about my mental illness and my history of mental illness, I didn't expect the response that I got, which was very kind of like, which was really incredibly positive. And I was like, oh my God, this is what, you know, and it was like a real amazing kind of wave of finding other people like me, but realizing I wasn't a freak, you know. And I kind of surfed on that for quite a long time, and now I'm sort of like, if I, you know, there's a point where it's like nothing can, it sounds like so first world problems, but like nothing, it's like on paper all of the ambitions or things that I would have wanted to achieve have all happened, you know, in spades. I've had like number one best-selling books. I've had, you know, I've gone, you know, pretty, you know, my career as a journalist is arguably, you know, I couldn't go any further, and I can always go further, but like I, you know, I've reached sort of heights, and yet it's like, oh, all of that's happened, but none of it is enough, you know? Mm-hmm. So I suppose maybe that's more of a kind of realizing that actually it's maybe the kind of the other thing is the kind of the, sorry, I'm really not articulating myself very well, but
you're doing
the
great.
Markers of success that I had throughout my life have been hit, and you know, and then so you hit them, don't you, and you go, oh, and then you expect everything to be okay. You're like, then
well, it's a bit like moving to Australia and expecting you to be different, you know. They're doing a geographical thing, like, yeah, oh, I know, if I move to Australia I'll be okay, or I know if I have, you know, a week where my articles are published in the Telegraph on a daily basis and everyone's loving them and sharing them, I'll be okay. But actually those are external things. You being okay is an internal thing,
very
right?
How much have you
when you said you've been thinking a lot about validation, how much have you thought about validation in terms of the addictive qualities of validation?
A lot, yeah. Like I've been writing things, like I've got this sort of idea. I'm actually gonna, I think my map, sorry, this might have to be edited out. My MacBook is telling me that it's getting very hot.
Oh, because of the sun.
It needs to cool down. So I'm just gonna
You do whatever you need to do. Do what you need to do.
I definitely need a new computer. Sorry. Okay. I think that's okay. I can see you properly now as well. Come on, sorry. Chargers. Okay, restart. addictive qualities of validation. I think it's incredibly addictive, isn't it? You know, it's all those sort of dopamine. Oh, I belong, I belong, I belong. And I really think, and I really think we're starting to see a sort of, in terms of social media and what that has sort of done to our brains, I really think that we're starting, people are starting to sort of question it a bit, you know, for the first time and go, I mean, people have been questioning it for ages, but like people are actually starting to kind of, I feel that I'm finally starting to kind of move away from needing it as much, you know, and to see how sort of mercurial it is and how kind of flighty it is. And how it doesn't really matter because it's there's so much of it, you know, there's so much going on. But I definitely, definitely for a while, I was like, oh my God, all these people like me, I must be okay, you know? Yeah. But the problem with social media is you get like, you know, it'll tell you how many people have unfollowed you that day or, you know, over time. And it's like, oh, that, and it's almost like the graphs that you see, you can almost go, well, that must track with how good, how useful and, you know, I am as a human. And it's like, no, that isn't the truth. Do you know what I mean?
No.
So I definitely think, you know, Joe, you know, I've been sober for a little bit, but I definitely think the first few years of my sobriety, I was staying sober on validation.
Okay. But of course, validation's not going to kill you as quickly as alcohol and drugs were. Mm-mm. So, you know, there's, but maybe this is the next layer for you.
I think it definitely is the next layer. Yeah.
How much do you,
I'm so sorry about this, Joe. I'm just trying to get myself in a position with my back.
Get yourself comfortable. Oh yeah. You've hurt your back, haven't you?
Hey, back. Right. How much do I, yes.
How much do you validate yourself?
That's such a good question.
Thanks.
A professional or something. not very often. I spend my whole time trying to seek it from outside, from other people, from like my husband, from work. I don't know if I necessarily value my assessments of myself.
Okay. Oh, you don't value your assessments. It's not even like you're not validating yourself. You don't even see that there would be value in you doing so.
It's like, well, it's like, well, what I think doesn't matter.
Just say that again.
It's like, well, what I think doesn't really matter, does it?
Mm.
What matters
well,
is
we
can like,
say that
it's out there, I think.
Okay, but we can say that about anyone, right? So if what you think doesn't matter and you're a human being, then what any human being thinks doesn't matter.
Yeah, but then I go into this whole thing and I think my history, like the obsessive compulsive disorder really comes in there, is that like, yes, but Bryony, you're a bad person, you've upset people, you're, you know, I guess that's my whole thing. Like from, like my first... Like I first obsessive compulsive disorder, which I've had since I was really little. And I realized that it was like this kind of, oh, I realized my mood, I felt very much that my mood affected the mood of everybody in the house, you know?
Yeah.
And why couldn't I just be like a normal person, you know, why couldn't I be that, like that? And I think OCD was like my brain's way of trying to search for a reason, you know, for like why I was bad. Does that make sense? I don't know if it does. And like,
yeah, it does make sense.
It's like I really believe a lot on a kind of quite a lot on a sort of daily basis that I'm not a good person. And yeah. in a way, my entire career has been trying to like reassure myself that I am, you know, like,
yeah.
It's been trying to find other people like me, but it's also kind of like, it's like, you're okay, you're not that bad. And yeah, so like right now, for example, I'm slightly worrying because there's a friend I have and, you know, we kind of like, it's, we, you know, they live very close to me and it's like, sometimes I'm like, oh, we're supposed to meet up and then I can't, or do you know what I mean? And I haven't heard from her and I'm like, oh, I pissed her off because I've been really flaky, you know? I actually think probably, you know, she may be like a tiny bit annoyed, but mostly she's just getting on with her own life. You know what I mean? It's like, like, why can't you just commit to things and stick to them, Bryony? Why, you know, like, why can't you stick to your word? Why are you so difficult?
Okay. Well, and that's one version of events, right? Mm-hmm. But you and I have known each other a while.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had like things in the diary that then we can't make, one of us can't make. And another version of events is that I would look on someone like you and think, she's a really busy woman. You know, and we'll just find another time.
Mm.
No judgment at all. Like, that's another version of events. That is another truth. But you're assuming that your friend is thinking terrible things about you because you're overlaying the terrible things you think about yourself onto her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can only imagine what goes on in someone else's head if it goes on in our own.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know all of this.
Well, there's something I'm really interested though in where you've picked up this core belief that Bryony is bad.
I mean, I think it was because I in the 80s there wasn't much kind of understanding of mental illness and stuff like that. And I was a really scared child. And I think childhood is quite scary, you know?
Yeah.
I genuinely don't have any blame for my mother or father about this because, like, all of us, do you know what I mean? Like, they are all, and still, all just trying to do their best. And I know that they love me. like, might be a bit annoyed by me from time to time, but that's okay. But like,
well, you and I are mothers, we know what that feels like.
But like, so my parents were like really busy, you know, trying to hold stuff together. Do you know what I mean? Both had jobs, three children. And I think this is, we're seeing what really touches me now about like the one of the things that I, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about mental illness so much is because it is, you know, it is common and it happens. And we know that something like 70% of people, if they are going to experience a mental illness, they will have experienced it by the time they turn 14, right? So, you know, it's there. And yet we don't really know how to deal with children who are anything other than, you know, in the box of happy, you know, and that can be said, and that's not just for mental illness, that can be said for, you know, neurodivergence, you know, dyslexia, all of those things. And so,
yeah,
I'm really so pleased that we are starting to talk about that and realize that we can't fit square pegs in round holes and all of that kind of thing, right? And I think I was very much like a square peg in a round hole, and I was very anxious. Like, I was anxious about like nuclear war, like, and what I, you know, like, I can laugh about it now, but like to such a high level, you know? I was really anxious about nuclear war, about flooding, about the ozone layer, about, you know, it was like everything was going to kill us, you know. And I remember that when I was about 8 or 9, just thinking, oh my God, like, this is awful. And I just remember being scared. Like, that's my predominant feeling of being a child, is that I was just scared of everything. I was scared of going into a classroom. I was scared of going to a birthday party. I was scared of, you know, and it's really, people go, what? Because I'm really confident, you know, I'm really kind of loud, but like, I was terrified, you know, just the thought of having to be, you know, like meet someone new, like a family thing, you know, like I was, it was like, terrified me. It was like, I was painfully shy, basically. I was painfully shy. I felt painfully shy. And I think that wasn't easy. Do you know what I mean? That wasn't easy. And so I think that I took on this notion that my sister, and then, you know, latterly my brother, who's much younger than me, had to, you know, they had to kind of live in my shadow, so to speak, you know, the shadow that I cast, first by my difficult, you know, being difficult in terms of like having a lot of anxiety. And my mum, you know, bless her, like, she did, you know, given that it was like the mid-80s, do you know what I mean, like what there was available, she tried, you know, she was like, here's some Mexican worry dolls to put under your pillow. And I remember I was worried about fire at one point, and I remember her buying me a little bell, because I was like, but what if there's a fire, how will I let you all know? And she was like, here's a little bell, you know, like there was, you know, it was like, wasn't like this was ignored in any way, you know. But I remember thinking, oh, I'm really causing a lot of trouble here just by being me, you know.
Right.
And I don't want to be this way, you know. I don't want to be frightened that there were, like, I remember when I was like 12, I saw accidentally an advert for like Alien 3 or something, yeah. And I became convinced, and it was almost like that an alien was going to come through the, you know, one of those horrible, like, Ridley Scott aliens was going to come through the roof. And I also remember, you know, there was, like, when I was like 12, I became convinced, even though I'd never kissed a boy, do you know what I mean, that I was pregnant. And it was like, what, like, really, I was pregnant. And then I was convinced I had AIDS. And, you know, so it was like constant anxiety. You know, and I remember my mum used to say to me, you worry when you don't have anything to worry about. She was true.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
I didn't know how, and still to a certain extent, I don't know how to be calm. Like, I do know how to be calm. I'm much better at it. Like, but I'm suspicious of it, put it that way. I'm like, don't get too cozy in this, Bryony, because something could be just around the corner. And I've got much better at going, okay, well, then if it is, we'll deal with that then. But like, right now is all we have, right? Right now, all we have is me and you having this nice chat. The sun's out, and Doreen.
Let's go back, though, to this belief about you being bad, because you've referenced you being difficult is how you described it. So I said to you, where did you pick up this belief that you're bad? And then you've told me about your OCD and how it might have affected your family. And I think you said that you described it as you being difficult. And in my head, I thought, okay, no, she was being ill. But that it can be difficult for. So my eldest daughter, as I think you know, suffered OCD from the age of 2 to 14, and we got her treated at the Maudsley. They were unbelievably brilliant. So, but you know, she's a child born in 2004, right? So we could access treatment. You were born in the late 70s, early 80s. No treatment.
I was born in 1980.
I think you said 1990, then I was going to go, come on, woman. Even I'm not that naive. Okay, so you, yeah, so you're just in, born in the 80s. And so, but, you know, we lived with Beth's, she won't mind me saying that, she's very open about it. We lived with her OCD as a family for, what's that, 12 years. And it, of course it was difficult. Of course it was difficult. But she was ill. She was ill, and we always knew that. And actually, we as a whole family got treated, because with OCD, the whole family has to get involved, because the person with the OCD pulls all the family into their terror. You know, and the family start doing things like giving you a bell to manage, rather than the what's recommended in the treatment is you certainly don't give a bell. You say to them, what is OCD saying to you right now? Because they learn that there's this, you've done this, I'm sure you've got your own recovery program. You learn that that your OCD is not telling you the truth, like it's a separate voice. And we've been really lucky as a family that she's got a lot better. We got a lot better as a family. But I'm really interested in this lingering belief you've got that Bryony's bad because Bryony was ill.
Mm.
What would your brother and sister say if they could hear you saying this now? Which they might, because they might listen to this podcast.
I don't think they'd say that at all. I think they'd say Bryony was, you know, it was like I was ill and then I learned I could turn it into something different, you know, which was like, I realized in my, you know, I realized in my late teens that I could be quite funny. And so then it was like, oh, Bryony is the center, or I could, or I was good at, you know, I was good at academically, or I was, and then it was like, oh, Bryony is the center of attention. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, then they're in the shadow for a different reason. It was never that thing of like, well, that's just who you are, Bryony. Do you know what I mean? Like, and people, like, it's not you being you doesn't take away from other people, you know?
Right.
And I can see that now, logically.
Unless they allow it to. Right, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, these are sort of, these are really codependent beliefs, I think, that lots of families have, you know? And
yeah.
And I think it's its own, you know, and then you sort of heard something the other day, which is like, what you don't deal with now, your children will have to deal with, you know, down the line. And so we do just pass the stuff down, you know. So I realize I've just been handed stuff that was handed to my parents, that was handed to their, you know, my grandparents, it was handed to my great grandparents. You know, it's like, it just is, you know, it's trickled down this kind of, and it's not, no one is actually kind of, you know, hate blame. You know, I've really realized in recovery that blame is just, because the blame is where I want to go. And like, in, like, if I'm, you know, if I'm left to my own devices, blame, but, you know, I will be blaming people because I'm in a crack den. You know.
Yeah, I heard that one before many times.
I'll be blaming people because I'm taking drugs and having sex with people who are not my, I'm not married to, and who, you know, and I'm off my face, and it will be other people's fault, you know, it, but still blame is like, I can, you know, I can wake up in the morning like, who can I be cross with? You know, not all the time, but, you know, and I've realized blame is just so unhelpful. And obviously there are times when, you know, people are responsible for bad things, and, you know, but so anyway, but what I'm trying to say is I don't apportion any blame, certainly, to my parents.
Well, except you are apportioning blame to yourself.
Yes, that's true.
So let's just stop here. Like, you're being super compassionate and super reasoned, because of course, no parent sets out to do things that would upset their child. Of course not. And we're only, as we can only deal with the trauma we've been handed with, dependent on the level of our consciousness at the time, right? So, and you have a recovery program now, so you know, you've got a level of consciousness and awareness that maybe your mum and dad didn't have, so therefore you can deal with more. But this thing you've been saying about blaming, that is your default setting, you've learned not to blame other people, but you, my darling, are still blaming yourself.
That's a good point.
We've been talking for half an hour, and this is one of the roots of what's going on. It's like, I've got to have a scapegoat. What, who can I have as a scapegoat? What I'll have to do. I'll be my own scapegoat. Oh, and everyone else's.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe I don't spend my time blaming other people.
Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Because, no. You know, because you're sober now. So, you know, that crazy thinking is the crazy addicted thinking is, you know, no longer there. But I think you've still got a blame habit is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but to myself.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's at the bottom. That's what this, you know, like that's at the core of what holds me back. You know, if things are holding me back, that is what is holding me back. To not stand in my power, you know?
Well, not be comfortable, because you are like, you know, from an objective point of view, I know you know this, but it bears repeating, you are a very powerful woman. Like, your honesty about your mental health struggles has, you are one of the people who's opened up a conversation that otherwise would not be happening. You know, my daughter read your book and was like, that's me. This is before you and I knew each other. You read your OCD book and was like, well, I read it first and I was like, I think that's Beth. And then she read it and said, that's me. You know, and then there's a dialogue. So, you know, you are an incredibly powerful woman. I would argue that your issues, what you call difficulties, your illness, in it, you've flipped and turned into a gift for so many other people. Because you are one of, you know, you are someone with a voice, a national voice, you know, Telegraph journalist and loads of books written, you know, and friends with, you know, all sorts of influential people. There's a conversation out there.
Oh, no.
Say that again.
Such as yourself. My Thank internet you. Is really slow.
I know, we're being a bit slow here as well. We'll just keep going. We'll just keep going. Yeah. But you,
if I turn, you know, camera off, might that help?
Might help. Go for it. Although it's nice to see your gorgeous face.
No, but I think it might. Now?
Yeah, that does sound a bit clearer. I think it's... Let's do that for a bit, and we'll bring we'll bring you back. Yeah. We'll bring you back in a moment. But you know, I'm interested in, because all behaviour has a positive intention. We learn this when we first start training as coaches. All behaviour has a positive intention. So they're in some kind of funny way, you are trying to get something positive from this blaming of yourself, or having this frame of the world in which someone has to be blamed. So I'm wondering for you what you might be gaining from this blaming Bryony thing. How do you benefit?
I mean, that's a very good question. I take it off other people.
Yeah.
Then other people are happy.
Okay, yeah.
Just making notes. And then the other person isn't upset.
Yeah.
Maybe then I get attention. No, that's a bit, I don't know if that is necessarily the case.
No, I think that's it might be like you being a bit mean on yourself.
Yeah.
Can I throw in a possibility? This is literally just a possibility, because you know your own head, I don't. But I've worked with people in the past for whom having someone to blame is part of their kind of the frame of life they have, which is that there has to always be a cause and effect. There has to always be, if a bad thing happens, there has to be someone to blame. Otherwise, it's just chaos. And I can't live in a chaotic world because that's too scary.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way our brains kind of mitigate against the uncertainty of life, the part chaos we find ourselves living in, that kind of powerlessness we've got. Whereas if there's someone to blame, then it's sort of a bit more neatly packaged.
Yeah.
Does that make sense for you?
That does. No, it totally does. And I very much, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I very much, you know, I'm quite analytical. I remember my mum and dad always saying that you're very analytical, Bryony. And of course that's a great bonus if you're a journalist or a writer But it is also like things have to make sense to me, you know? Yeah. Like that cause and effect thing that you are talking about. You know, I need to understand that. And otherwise I'm a bit like, well, why has this happened? And you know, you're right. Sometimes things just happen because life. You know?
That can be intolerable. That can be intolerable for those of us who are hardwired to fear.
Well, it's that sort of magical thinking, isn't it, as well? But I also think it's difficult, you know, being in recovery, you know, which is amazing and wonderful and all of those things. But you know, what I find hard to square is, you know, that sort of magical thinking and how I know that doesn't help. Magical thinking doesn't help with the everything happens for a reason kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Talk a bit more about that. I'm going to try and put your camera back on just so we can see you again. If it doesn't work, I'm going to click you off again. Oh, I thought I could do it from my end. It doesn't look like I can. Try popping your camera on again and then talk to me a little bit more about the magical thinking versus the everything happens for a reason. There you are. Let's try this again.
I guess it would... Like, I know magical thinking doesn't keep me safe, you know, but I kind of think that everything happens for a reason feels a bit like magical thinking. But I kind of have to kind of untangle that, because the everything happens for a reason is really saying, okay, something bad may have happened, but it's not necessarily because you behaved badly. It maybe it's opening up for something else to come in, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's really difficult, because that to me still feels a little bit like magical thinking.
Yeah.
You know?
But then we as humans, we've got these finite brains trying to pin down and understand something that is vastly greater than our abilities to understand it, i.e. life. Like, you know, I think we've only scratched the surface of understanding from science. And I'm not sure it's within our gift as humans to fully get it at all.
Mm.
But as we try to, you know, so that thing about everything's happening for a reason, I suppose I imagine that to be more like, well, if I were looking at the Earth from the viewpoint of the moon, if I was stood on the moon looking at the Earth, I'd be able to see, oh yeah, that awful thing happened, but it actually meant that there was that and that, and there's a knock on. I can't see that because I'm down on the earth trying to work out why this terrible thing has happened. But then the thing with magical thinking, that everything happens for a reason, is it does at least calm us down when we're in fear.
It does, but it's also, you know, in obsessive compulsive disorder, what, like 101, like 101, you know, I need to remind myself that me saying a phrase is not going to keep my family alive.
Yeah, of course. And going back to, you know, so it's yourself? Like,
yeah, I think I do. It's everything's got a bit.
It's gone funny again.
Do you mind
again?
If I switch it back off again?
No, let's take your camera off again. No, absolutely. It was worth a try. Taking this back though to this blaming thing you do, and we were looking at the reasons why you might blame yourself, why it's kind of helpful to you, what you're getting. We were talking about taking it off other people. Others are then happy. The other person might not be upset. And then there is this kind of fairness, fantasy, magical thinking stuff.
Mm.
Would you say that they all play into this need for you to have someone to blame, and it looks like you're the most convenient person at the moment?
Yes, it does. Maybe it does, yeah.
Okay. So what would it be like to live in a world where 9 times out of 10, because obviously, like you say, you know, there are, like, you know, people to blame for doing terrible things. You know, Putin, good example. He is to blame for that war, even though he's telling everyone he's not. But, you know, like on a sort of day-to-day basis, in just the kind of rumble and rough and tumble of life, you know, you happen to be born with a certain set of brain cells that were coping with life in a different way to your brothers and sisters. That's just how it was. Rather than you, could you imagine living in a world where that was just what it was, rather than Brian is bad because she took attention away from her brother and sister?
I can, because I kind of live in that world now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know? As adults,
how much do you live in that world?
I mean, I don't I mean, I don't live in that world at all, you know. I mean, I suppose on a very literal sense, in terms of me and my brother and my sister, that's what I was talking mm-hmm. about.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Don't take attention to my brother and my sister. You know, we're
okay, I'm with you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. And are you saying that on a rational basis, you know that, but maybe there's a part of you that's still not believing it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I wonder, you know, like, I wonder even if it's as simple as, like, birth order, you know, like, I was the firstborn, and mm-hmm. maybe I, you know, I don't know, like, I feel like maybe I was horrified when my mother and father started giving attention to something else. I don't know, again, but that's me blaming myself again, isn't it?
Isn't it just, yeah. Yeah, it is you blaming yourself again, and it's you trying to find reasons.
Because I was 2.5 when my sister so funny. I call my sister by my daughter's name and my daughter by my sister's name. They're so similar.
As long as they know. As long as they know, they've got to.
They know who they are. They know who they are.
Exactly.
I mean, there is a good sort of, like, 30 years between them.
This is so much of this.
Maybe,
you know,
things
this
are
needs,
just what they are.
Maybe things just are what they are. Maybe things just were what they were. And maybe your brother and sister needed to grow up with mm-hmm. you and your certain DNA for the journey that they're on in their lives, and you needed them.
Mm.
Like, actually, you know, actually, we don't know. Coming back, though, I made a note about, because I asked you about how much you validated yourself, and you were a bit like, doof, round the head, what a question. Don't think I do it that much. what would it, can you imagine even what self-validation would look like, would sound like, would feel like, would how it would manifest on a daily basis? Because you are someone who needs validation. So am I, right? You know, we are people who need to be told we're doing well. Nothing wrong with that. But we don't have to rely on other people for all of it.
I've sort of glimpses of it. I have glimpses of it when people, it's really interesting, when people behave badly, like really badly. And I go,
yeah.
And I find myself going, oh, fuck off, just in my brain. I don't say it to them. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But this is like, you know, they send a, that, and, you know, a bad message or the whatever, I just think, oh, do you know what? Just fuck off. Just, and I'm better at just standing around and going, do you know what? No. And I suppose that's not validating myself so much. It's more kind of not putting up with shit. But like, I am much.
But that's a good start.
Yeah. So I guess validating myself for me is like, okay, Bryony, you're going to get up and you're going to look after yourself today. You know, because because as an alcoholic in recovery, you know, I got up every day and I did not look after myself. You know, like I tried to kill myself most days, right? And I can still do that, like self-harm. You know, like I don't harm myself, like in the kind of the terms that we, you know, but like, you know, I can still try and find the ways, you know, I can do things that I know are going to hurt me and not, you know, not help me. And yet I don't care. I still do them. So, you know, that could be food. That could be, I don't know, I'm trying to think, like buying something I can't afford. It could be, you know, all of those things.
Of course.
But I'm much better. You know, this is where my self-validation for me is like, Bryony, you're absolutely worth getting up and lifting some weights, you know, and having you know, and going for a walk or doing something lovely with your family or going on holiday or, you know, that's, I guess that is my kind of self-validation.
Okay. Those are like massively healthy self-esteem habits that I bang on Instagram about all of the time, right? And they are foundational, like learning to stand up for ourselves, as you've been saying, learning to think, oh, just fuck off if someone's been rude to you on social. I know you get loads of it, right? Just like that person, I'm not gonna let that stick. Doing kind of kind things for yourself, so getting into cold water, you and I both love that, or running or eating well or whatever. But from other people, what you are seeking is them saying you're doing really well. Yeah. You want your husband to say to you, you look beautiful today, my darling. Or you want your editor to say that was a great piece. Or you want comments on social media saying, I love the work you do, Bryony, keep it up, that kind of stuff. I'm wondering, and this is going to feel really gacky, but I'm wondering whether you could start doing that kind of stuff for yourself on a daily basis.
Yeah, I could. It does gacky, as you say.
Yeah. But it does start working.
Yeah. Do you think so? What? So I just start saying things like, Bryony, you're doing really well.
Well, what you could do at the end of each day or the beginning of each day or at some point in the day, write yourself a letter or do some journaling and you say, what have I done well today? Like, very simple. What have I done well today?
I do. You know,
what am I proud of? Okay. That's gratitude. That's great. That's gratitude to the universe or a higher power or, you know, your AA group or whatever, right? So that's all amazing, but gratitude is not quite what I'm talking about. It's part of it, but this is more about you self-approving. You actually writing down and saying at the end of each day, I put some basil seeds in a pot and I think they might have taken root. That's a good thing. I cuddled my child when actually she was doing my head in. You know, I responded with love. That's a good thing. I wrote a great blog that I'm really proud of. You know, that's a good thing. I my hair looks nice today. Like, just silly things. But things that we're seeking from other people, we can actually start to give to ourselves, because it's that kind of reparenting, that self-parenting thing, that the little bit of you that's wanting to blame you for everything doesn't think she's worthy of. That's why other people's stuff never lasts, because it just comes onto you and slides off. It's like a drink, you know, it's in, it does its job, and then, oh, I need another, and I need another, and I need another. Same with these validations from outside.
Okay, I'll start that tonight then.
Well, let's think of 10 things in the last 24 hours that you did, that you can say, I did that well, or that was good about me. Okay. What do you say to yourself? I know you're feeling really awkward right now, even though we can't see your face. I can imagine you're cringing.
I mean, the last 24 hours have not been great. My skin is looking really amazing.
Yeah.
That's like a clear, obvious, that's an easy one.
Beautiful. Your skin's looking amazing.
I helped someone, I spent some time with a newcomer, someone who's newly sober. I cooked a really delicious meal for my family.
Yay.
I wrote a really funny column.
Brilliant, well done.
Really early in the morning. I got up early in the morning, which I never.
There you go. There's one.
I did a massive strength workout with my lovely trainer, Hayley.
Right.
How many is that?
That's six. You're doing really well. You could say I gave myself an hour to have some coaching.
I gave myself an hour to have some coaching.
Yeah, well done.
I got into bed and read a book that I'm absolutely loving, by a woman called Louise Erdrich.
Okay, I wouldn't mind reading that after you, please. Thank you. Did you smile at people?
Yes. I always smile at people. No,
I know you do. That's why I'm asking. You smile at people. That's a beautiful thing.
I smiled at people. I thanked someone for helping me out with something.
Yeah.
I apologized for being a bit flaky. I had a really good, if difficult, chat with my husband.
Amazing. It's been a pretty decent 24 hours by the sounds of things.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, if you actually think that was 24 hours, this is 24 hours we're talking about. Mm. And you started by saying it's not been a very good 24 hours, which is that negative part of our brains that we've all got, the bit that wants to blame Bryony. Oh, she's not very good. She's not been perfect. She's not, you know, it doesn't, a successful 24 hours might, you might have an idea of what that looks like. And what the 24 hours we've just been talking about might not match up to that ideal. But actually, when we actually drill down and examine the last 24 hours, there's loads of amazing, real life, beautiful stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to, every time you find yourself slipping into that needing to blame yourself thing, which will be a, you know, something you're going to have to catch, would you be willing to try and replace that with five things you've done really well in the last 24 hours?
Why, but it's so frequent. I will, or I'll just catch myself.
Yes. And just think, oh, I'm doing that blaming thing again. Because no one, you know, this is one truth I know, Bryony, is no one else benefits from my guilt and shame. You know, there's a part of me that will tell me that if I'm feeling guilty and ashamed of who I am, that other people, that will make other people happy. That means I'm sort of, you know, that's where I should be, low down in life. You know, all of that old toxic thinking. No one ever benefited from me feeling guilty and ashamed for things I didn't need to feel guilty and ashamed for being me. In the same way that no amount of me being poor is going to stop other people being poor. You know, other people are far more, people who are poor are far more likely to get some money from me if I'm earning good money because I might share it. And other people are far more likely to be released into their potential and power if I'm released into mine because I can help them and show them how.
Mm.
You know, other people never benefit from us blaming ourselves, you know, unless we've done something actually truly awful and we need to go and say sorry, you know, that's different. But you dragging around this idea that you know, you're to blame is an act of self-hate in a way.
Mm-hmm.
then it's not helping anyone.
No, it's not serving anyone. You in your power, you in your glory, you standing in that, look at me, you know, not only do I write amazing columns for like a big national newspaper and have, is it 7 or 8 books now published, like bestsellers? Not only is that, there's also all the normal mundane day-to-day stuff that actually, you know, I kissed my child, I had a difficult conversation with my husband, I cooked a meal, I put a load of washing in, you know, I walked the dog, all of that kind of stuff. That's, you know, that's a successful life by anyone's stretch. But your challenge, I think, is self-validation.
Thank you.
Okay. Tell me, before that's... we... Go on, what were you going to say?
You're really good at what you do.
Oh, thanks. I genuinely love doing this. Before we finish, just have a little think and tell me, what are the main things you're going to take away from our conversation that we've had today?
I don't indulge in blame, but I do. I blame myself.
Yeah, that was a big one.
But maybe this just is the way life is, and that's fine, and there doesn't need to be any explanation for it.
Mm-hmm.
And me carrying around guilt and shame doesn't help anyone.
Yeah, amazing. What a privilege and an honor to coach you. Come on, what were you gonna say? You find it,
I find that really difficult, because it's like, oh, if I take the guilt and shame, I'm taking away other people's guilt and shame.
No, you're not.
No,
we can't take other people's emotions. We think we can, but we can't. That's actually not possible. It's not possible. They have to, and everyone, if we're attempting to take on someone else's guilt and shame, it means we're denying them the opportunity to face their stuff and grow.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. What an honor and a privilege to coach you, Mrs. It's been amazing.
Oh, well, I mean, the honour and the privilege is all mine. Thank you.
If you can relate to Bryony's core belief that there is something inherently wrong with you, here is what I would suggest. Firstly, write down the evidence you have for this core belief. Write down all of it. Now, ask yourself, how would you feel about another human being if they presented you with this evidence? Would you show them compassion? Would you, in fact, be able to contextualise their behaviour? Thirdly, ask yourself what life might be like for you if you dropped the belief that you are bad. Four, ask yourself, what are you gaining by believing in your own badness? Remember, all behaviour has some kind of positive intention. Lastly, consider this statement, no one benefits from me believing that I am bad. Now, for the next 24 hours, I want you to go about your life as if you are not bad, but actually a really great person. Try on this new way of thinking about yourself for a day. And then if you like it, try it again for another 24 hours and another until you have formed a new healthy thought habit. I promise you, you are not bad.